Suchi can be very powerful to share some of that vulnerability with your team, because your team on the outside just sees you on the outside and they assume that you know what you're doing, you're sort of just 100% awesome. And the reality is, of course, you're not. And it can be very helpful for them to understand, actually, that we're all grappling with imposter syndrome, because that then gives them confidence and courage and conviction and sense that they might be on the right track when they're also feeling it as well. So I think it's really helpful to talk about it.
Hey everyone, Ben Morton here, and thanks for joining me on episode 21 of the show and my interview with Tessa Clark, who is the co-founder and CEO of Olio. Olio is a free app tackling the problem of food waste by connecting neighbours with each other and volunteers with local businesses so that surplus food can be shared and not thrown away. Since launching just over 4 years ago, 2.5 million people have joined Olio, and together they've shared over 9 million portions of food. Tessa started her career as a strategy consultant at Boston Consulting Group and then spent 10 years as a digital managing director in the media, retail and financial services sectors. She met her co-founder, Sasha Celestial One, whilst they were studying for their MBAs at Stanford. Tessa's written bio describes how she is passionate about the sharing economy as a solution for a sustainable world, and about profit with purpose as the next business paradigm. And this passion really comes across in this interview. If you're passionate about these things, and if you're interested to know more about the leadership challenges and solutions of running an early stage startup, then this is absolutely the episode for you. But before we get into the interview, let me just very quickly share some exciting news for you, in that we've just launched a brand new online program. The Personal Leadership Mastery Program is designed to help leaders and managers to play at their best in and out of work in a fast-paced, rapidly changing world. All of the details to the course are in the show notes, along with an exclusive 30% discount code for you as a fan of the podcast. But that's enough about that for now. So without any further delay, please enjoy my interview with Tessa Clark, co-founder and CEO of Olio. Hello, Tessa. Welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on the show today. First of all, how are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. As good as we can be in lockdown.
And in lockdown, talking of that, whereabouts are we talking to you? Whereabouts in the country or world are you?
Well, I am very lucky because I am based out in Wiltshire in the UK. So I have lots of fields on my doorstep. So it's really good to be able to just escape when you want to get away from the madness of the world.
Brilliant. And I hadn't planned on asking this at all, but are you somebody who likes to try and do some walk-in meetings, or are you one of those people who's doing a virtual commute to get you up and moving from the desk and the back-to-back Zoom meetings? What's a typical day look like at the minute?
Well, I've got a couple of things that I'm doing at the moment. So I don't do walking meetings because, unfortunately, the mobile reception is so poor, even though I'm bang slap in the middle of the UK. So that's not possible, but I do walk or run every single day, sort of in the morning after I've dropped the kids off for school, and I listen to podcasts, and that is where I get some exercise in nice and early. I get my energy levels up and I just get a ton of inspiration from other people. And then during the day, this is going to sound a bit ridiculous, but I'm experimenting with what I'm calling, it probably might have a better word, but micro exercise. So just when the kids were in lockdown, my family and I, we did the Joe Wicks exercises at first thing in the morning. And it was amazing how much could be done with sort of 20 minutes of workout. So I'll just, in between a meeting, just do sort of one of his exercises. And it seems to be working well so far.
That's brilliant. And I'm completely derailing my own podcast here by asking these questions. But I love that. I do a similar thing. I call it microdosing exercise, but probably even shorter than you. I've been trying to work in sort of 45, 50 minute sprints, and then just taking a 5 minute break, or I might do some squats or push ups in my office.
I think you mean the second sprints, right? Not minute sprints.
No, sorry. 45 to 50 minute sprints of work.
Oh, sprints of work. Okay. I thought you meant literally like you were going out in your garden and sprinting for 45 minutes. I was like, wow, that's hardcore. That's not what my micro exercising is like. Mine is like 20 squats whilst I'm putting on the kettle for a cup of tea.
No, brilliant. Thanks for clarifying. No, 45 to 50 minutes of like head down focus work.
Got
and
it.
Then I'll take sort of 5 minute break, stretch my legs, do some press ups or some squats just to energize the body before going again.
Yeah, me too. And I always sort of dread that someone's going to kind of walk in and see me down on the floor and wonder what on earth's going on, but never mind.
Absolutely. So at that point, we should probably rewind slightly, Tessa. So to kick off, which is normally the first question I ask every guest on the show, it's the context question. So can you tell us a little bit about Olio, kind of your role, and I guess the backstory or your career journey that got you to where you are now, if you don't mind?
Fantastic. So I'll start off at the beginning because otherwise I might get lost. So my parents are farmers in North Yorkshire. And so I had a well-spent or misspent childhood, depending upon how you look at it, working incredibly hard on my parents' family farm. I had absolutely no clue what I wanted to do when I grew up. And so after university, I became a strategy consultant, which to me seemed like a great sort of starter job when you don't know what you want to do. But very quickly, I realized that I wanted to do rather than just advise and consult. And so I moved over into industry and then spent almost 15 years working always in the digital space, but in retail, in media, and in financial services. And I had what could be described as a fairly classic corporate career, always general management position. So I was MD two or three times. But I then sort of took a sharp detour from that classic corporate career to found Olio. And that all happened as a result of a seemingly inconsequential moment in my life just over 5 years ago now, when I was living in Switzerland and moving back to the UK. And on moving day, the removal men said I had to throw away all of our uneaten food. Now, given my farming upbringing and my pathological hatred for food waste, I was absolutely not prepared to throw this food in the bin. And so, much the irritation of the packing men, I instead set out into the streets to try and find someone to give that food to. And to cut a long story short, failed miserably and went back to my apartment. And it was as I was smuggling the non-perishable food into the bottom of my packing boxes, that was the moment when I thought, this is crazy. I'm having to go to these lengths to avoid throwing this food away. Why isn't there a simple app for that? And now there is. It's called Olio, and it's an app that connects people with their neighbours so you can give away rather than throw away your spare food. And we've got about 2.5 million users, predominantly in the UK, but about 25% of our audience is outside of the UK as well.
So I must admit, when I was doing research for today's podcast last week, I went and downloaded the app, which is brilliant. I found there's 282 Olios near me, which is amazing.
Hurrah. Yay.
That's great. So Tessa, that kind of leads me on really. It's a really nice segue. So I think in the business management, leadership world, there's been so much written probably over the last 7, maybe even 10 years around the importance of purpose and things like that, sort of Japanese theory of ikigai. So where things that you love, the things that you are good at come together. With that as the context, I just wonder sort of how big a part has purpose and passion played in the success of Olio? And I guess in other words, to put it another way, do you think kind of the business and app would have been as successful, you would have been as successful if you didn't have that true passion?
So in a word, no. Passion and purpose are at the very heart and foundations of Olio. And this is something actually I feel really strongly about how important it is to marry together that purpose with profit. Because I think for far too long, we've lived in this very sort of strange dichotomous world where we seem to think that the only types of organizations that can do good in the world or have a clear purpose in the world are charities, but they don't tend to scale particularly fast. And then we've got businesses, on the other hand, that for a very long time seem to have been lacking that sense of purpose and positive impact, but they've scaled very quickly and made a lot of money. And myself and Sasha, my co-founder, we believe really, really strongly that the new paradigm will be one that is all about profit with purpose. And that actually, if you're working in a business today that doesn't have profit with purpose, then you know, I'd like to think that within the next sort of 5 or 10 years, you will lose the license to exist. And we have found that having a purpose, it's not just something that sort of sounds nice, it does have a direct impact on the effectiveness of your organization in a couple of very real ways. So one, Olio is an early stage startup. We have limited access to capital, but we need to grow. And a really effective way we've found of doing that is by harnessing the power of our purpose. And we have managed to attract over 50,000 volunteers. These are ambassadors who are spreading the word about Olio in our local community because they are so bought into the mission and the purpose of the company. And so that has enabled us to grow in a way that is extremely effective and extremely capital efficient, I guess, for want of a better word. Then the other way in which having a purpose is incredibly powerful is in recruiting talent. So at Olio, on more than one occasion, Sasha and I have quite honestly cried tears of joy and also anguish, actually, after interviewing a whole string of amazing candidates and knowing that we've got to choose only one of them for the role. And I've worked for many organizations before, and recruitment has always been really challenging. And sort of you're lucky if you get one great candidate, whereas we are in this really privileged situation of being spoiled for choice when it comes to fantastic talent. And I believe that that is because our purpose just resonates with so many people.
That's amazing. There's two spin-off questions straight away from what you've just shared, Tessa. The first is, you said early on that you've got this view that in 5+ years, if you don't have profit with purpose, you feel businesses will almost lose the license to exist. Is that because you think consumers will stop wanting to buy products or services from those organizations? Is it because you think people will stop wanting to go and work in organizations that don't do that? Something different or a combination of both?
It's both. And I think sort of the leading indicator actually is recruitment and is employees and where people want to work. And I think that if you are an organization that doesn't have a clear positive impact on the planet and or local communities, then you will find yourself struggling to attract the top talent. Because if you've got a choice in working in job A and job B, and job B is a company that offers you all the same advantage of job A, but it also has an amazing purpose, which one are you going to pick? Of course, you're going to go for B. And the same actually applies to customers as well. They're increasingly saying that they want to sort of put their money where their mouth is, so to speak, and they want to back brands that hold the same values that they do. And I think we all need to remember that there's this whole new sort of wave of consumers who are coming into the market who have a very different value set than the old guard, and who can see that capitalism and therefore sort of our economy has really gone pretty far off piste in its just endless, relentless pursuit of profit above all other things. And this new cohort of consumers are voting with their wallets, and that will have massive ramifications for the business world. And the smart business leaders are the ones who can see that this is happening and who can, you know, sort of eat their own dinner before someone else does. So the sustainability revolution that is underway, for me, is very reminiscent of the digital revolution that I saw kind of the first wave of that in the early 2000s. And a lot of the incumbents were terrified of challenging their old business model because it was really profitable and it worked really well. And they didn't have the courage or the leadership conviction to move towards this brave new world. And the same is happening with the sustainability revolution. And, you know, the amount of innovation and disruption that's going to come out of the sustainability revolution is going to make the digital revolution look like a walk in the park, quite frankly. And the reason for that is because the fate of humanity is quite literally in the balance.
Well, I don't want to lose that. I'm going to come back to that. But the second question I wanted to ask you from your prior answer was, so it sounds like you're in a great position where in terms of recruitment, you've just got lots of highly talented people wanting to work with you who share your purpose. But I'm just curious, when you've been recruiting, have you had the situation at all where you've had some really talented people with great experience, great skills, but who don't connect with your purpose? And if so, what did you do? And if it was a you're not right for the organization, how easy or difficult was that decision to turn somebody away who on paper looked brilliant, but they just didn't have a strong enough connection to what you do?
Yeah, this has been a real dilemma for us, certainly in the early days. And the function where we felt this most acutely was when recruiting for technical talent. And in particular, we were using the latest technologies that were most in demand, plus we wanted a diverse technical team. So it was a super, super, super competitive market that we were trying to recruit into. And the temptation, therefore, was immensely high to lower that bar for the technical team around the mission obsession. But what we decided was that we absolutely would not lower that bar, and everybody who works at Olio has to pass it. And that bar is an ability to clearly demonstrate that you're not just mission aligned, you're mission obsessed. And every day I am thankful that we did not take the easy route out and lower the bar, and we kept it high. It has meant that it's taken us slightly longer to recruit for oppositions, but the benefits that we've had and reaped as a result have been absolutely enormous. And also just on a very day-to-day kind of human level, if everybody has kind of drunk the Kool-Aid about something, it would just be really weird if there was this other group of people who were part of the company and just didn't feel the same way. They would just be operating on a different rhythm and a different pace. And it's really, really effective to have a whole group of people who are all mission obsessed, focusing towards that same end game. And a massive advantage of that as well is it helps eliminate a lot of politics that exists in a lot of organizations, because all of us, each and every one of us, we are all in service to our higher purpose, which is the company's mission. And actually, at the end of the day, it's not about any one of us as of individuals. And so it creates just a really healthy, high-performing, but also enjoyable work environment.
Wow, that's great. And then coming back to something you said previously about how we've got this environmental sustainable revolution almost that's coming over the horizon, and how you feel that's going to be more disruptive than the sort of digital dot-com revolution. Kind of what advice would you share for people who are on track to move into sort of MD, CEO roles over the next sort of 5 years, knowing that that's what's coming at the world? What can people be doing to prepare to lead businesses through that time?
To me, it's really clear that you need to be heading into this on the front foot. And also, I think sort of prior to 2 years ago, if you were really leading in this space, you were putting your head above the parapet and you were volunteering to be shot to pieces by all your colleagues. It was very, very hard to lead in this space up until a couple of years ago. But since the IPCC report has come out, you know, warning humanity that we had 12 years to sort it out and it's now 10, I think there's a lot more consensus around the need for action. But I would say to anyone moving to those sorts of positions that you need to really, really lean into this. And if you don't, then your organization will get left behind. And if you find yourself in a situation where you're working with a bunch of colleagues who just don't get it, then I would just say, vote with your feet and leave. Like, humanity has not got time for people not to be focusing on solving this problem as a matter of urgency. And every man, woman, and child needs to be doing whatever they can to solve the triple crisis that we have: the biodiversity crisis, the climate crisis, and the resource depletion crisis. So go for it.
Brilliant. And that's another nice link you've given me, Tessa. I read, I think it was an interview transcript, I might have seen it on LinkedIn, where you were talking about how things are never as hard as they are on day one when there are no believers, I think you said.
Yeah.
I wonder what lessons have you drawn from that and linked to that, how do you or how can others go about really aligning their organization with the leader's vision and mission, or the organization's vision and mission?
Yeah, so it definitely is extremely hard on day one. And it's the same day one of any role, not just starting a business. On day one, you have maximum uncertainty. It feels like maximum risk. And also you haven't yet built any of the social fabric or relationships or support networks around you to alleviate any of that. So it all feels a bit grim. But on the plus side, if you just continue to push ahead, then inevitably over time, the degree of uncertainty starts to decrease, at least somewhat, and your confidence levels also start to increase. But I was reflecting on this the other day, and I realized that actually I'm never going to kind of move out of this sort of 50-50 zone where half of me is petrified and thinks I can't do what I need to do, and the other half of me thinks, yes, I can do it. And I think if you're constantly sort of pushing yourself on, you probably do spend quite a lot of your life in that zone. But I think if you're a leader who's leading an organization that isn't just wanting to just be very stable and steady, then inevitably that sort of comes, that's par for the course, really.
So I'd love to ask you about that. So how do you personally deal with that as an individual or as a leader, that 50-50 kind of, I can do this, no, I can't, kind of, I'm certain, kind of, no, I'm not? Because 50-50 is quite high on that, really. So how do you, where does the courage, the nerve, the drive, where does that come from? And sort of, are there any practical things you do day in, day out to help you manage that?
Well, this comes back to one of the great advantages of working on a clear mission or something with a clear purpose, because when you have those days where you're sort of wobbling, you then, I sort of give myself a metaphorical kind of slap around the face and I realize that this isn't about me. I need to do this to fulfill on the mission, and I just need to kind of get over myself. So that I find very helpful. Having that clear mission just spurs me on the whole time. I think the other thing that I've realized, I just philosophically think it's a massive waste of time just listening to that negative monkey on your shoulder. And so I really spend very little time listening to that monkey, because it's generally just wasted time and stopping me from getting on and doing stuff and experimenting and learning and improving stuff. So, yeah.
And have you always had that mindset and ability to ignore the monkey, or is that something you've learned and got better at over time and with experience?
I don't know. I'll have to go away and think about that. To be honest, I do think it's definitely something that I think I have always had an element of that in my life. I think probably because I sort of came from somewhere where I knew that the only way was up and the only way was out. And so I couldn't stay sort of wallowing around in self-pity. I just had to keep on moving. And I think I learned very early on that just keep on moving is the best solution, rather than sitting and spending too much time, as I say, in a space of negativity and self-doubt. Now, don't get me wrong, I have negativity and I have self-doubt, but I try and harness that purely to get some feedback, to figure out how I can improve myself, to then keep moving on. And I try not to just kind of go round and round in circles, because I can just see that takes you nowhere.
I'm so glad you shared that, Tessa, and kind of thank you for the honesty around that, because I think there's a dangerous sort of false persona that a lot of leaders can present, or anybody can present, I guess. And we see it more in the social media age, I guess. So what I'm saying is, I think we can often have this view that successful people, in inverted commas, never have any negativity. They've got some sort of otherworldly positive mindset and outlook. And I tend to agree with you. I don't think that's the reality. Like, we have those negative thoughts, but we're just able to sort of process them, deal with them, and move on quicker, right? It's not the kind of, certain people never have a moment of negativity. We just kind of learnt to manage it.
I think for me, sort of a really important part of figuring that out was realizing that this was all just sort of par for the course. And I sort of made myself smile the other day, because I was thinking back to the early days of Olio, And I just had enormous imposter syndrome, especially in the first year where I'd sort of given up this, you know, sort of on paper high-flying career to create a food sharing app, which everyone thought I was absolutely crazy about. And then the first year everyone would say, oh, what do you do? And I just really struggled to say the words, I'm an entrepreneur or I'm founding a startup. I felt just like such an imposter because I hadn't built any product. We hadn't done anything. It was still in an idea phase. And I realized the other day that I felt a little bit like, you know, when you were a kid and you sort of played dress up in your parents' clothes. And that was how it felt. It felt like I was sort of playing entrepreneur, playing startup founder. And it's the same, you know, the first time you step into an MD job, you feel like you're sort of playing that role. And the reality is you are playing that role. But if you do it often enough, day in, day out, then before you know it, you do actually sort of become that role and you kind of grow into it and you clothes start to fit. And if you just recognize that that's an inevitable part of the process, it's nothing that's kind of weird about you. It's just a fact of life. Then I think it's easier to just give yourself a bit of a break.
Yeah, absolutely. They do say that 80% of all statistics are made up on the spot. And I just made that up and I'm about to make this statistic up. But kind of, I think at least 60% of the MDs and CEOs who have already interviewed on this show have probably spoken about some degree of imposter syndrome. I just think, again, it's a very normal thought process. It's very kind of very human, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's actually really important. There's something Sasha and I are talking to our senior leadership team about on Monday. It's actually can be very powerful to share some of that vulnerability with your team, because your team on the outside just sees you on the outside and they assume that you know what you're doing. You're sort of just 100% awesome. And the reality is, of course, you're not. And it can be very helpful for them to understand actually that we're all grappling with imposter syndrome, because that then gives them confidence and courage and conviction and a sense that they might be on the right track when they're also feeling it as well. So I think it's really helpful to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Could not agree more. Tessa, are there any particular leadership models, frameworks, principles that you rely on or have stayed with you throughout your career that you still use?
So I must admit, when you sent me over the sort of bullet points of what you wanted to talk about, and I saw that question, I immediately felt inadequate. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't think I do have any frameworks and models to hand that I sort of use the whole time. But then when I sort of reflect on it a little longer, there are plenty of, I guess, sort of important nuggets that I carry with me. So the first one touches on the point that we're making just now, which is to be human. I can remember when I did my first general management job, I was kind of in my late 20s. I was 10 years younger than anyone who'd done that role before. Yeah, massive imposter syndrome. I had no clue what I was doing. And so as a result, I kind of overcompensated by attempting to be overly professional and overly sort of closed off. And I'll never forget someone in my team actually just giving me the feedback saying, when you show a bit more of the real you, we absolutely love it. And that just really shocked me and surprised me. And I just never crossed my mind that my team would want to know the real me. And so I just think kind of be human is always very helpful. And that also just applies in terms of recognizing that work isn't 100% of people's lives, and understanding kind of the full person is always very helpful. I think another thing sort of linked to that is just I always try and work quite hard to understand different types of people and recognize that we all have different models of communication. We all have different ways of thinking. We all have different approaches to the world. And if you're not careful and if you're in a hurry, it's too easy to default to your own worldview rather than kind of take the time to put yourself into someone else's shoes, you know, and say a classic thing that I reminded myself about just this week was the difference between kind of introverts and extroverts and understanding how they're having very different experiences with working from home. So I think just kind of reminding yourself of other people's kind of worldviews is really helpful. And then the third thing that I realized is that, or this is something I've only really learned through founding Olio, but it's really important just to be constantly testing, iterating and learning. And that therefore enables you to open yourself up to failure and not turn it into a big deal. And I found that really effective, not only in the workplace, but also kind of applying it to myself. So actually, you know, back to the micro exercise, that's just a small example of me saying, hey, I'll just experiment with this and see if it works for me or not. And if it doesn't, it's not a big deal, you know, kind of we'll move on. So I think that's a test, iterate and learn is a really helpful framework. And then the final thing that I spend quite a lot of time working on is feedback, because if you're operating in a fast-paced environment, sort of the only certainty is change, and change can create an enormous amount of discomfort for people, and things don't work often. And the sort of feedback model that I like to use is the situation. So in this situation, it had this effect on me, and this was the outcome, and this is how we'd like to see it changed. And so I just think the ability to give and receive feedback is really important.
That's fantastic. Tess, I'm conscious of time and want to be respectful of your time. So I've just got a couple of probably slightly more quickfire questions to finish up, if that's okay.
Go for it.
And the first one is, what are the one or two books that you've read that have really had a big impact on you, kind of as a leader or kind of much more broadly even?
So the first one is the one that I've sort of alluded to, which is The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. And that's really all about that sort of test, iterate and learn model. And then the second one, I should have looked this up before I came on. I think it's called Surrounded by Idiots. And that's the one that talks about the insights model with the sort of different color codes for different people and their different approaches to life.
Fantastic. And what are you reading about, learning about, or even curious about right now?
Well, I've just finished an excellent book called Moneyland, which is all about this sort of all the offshore finance and a third of the world's economy being kind of offshore, which was mind-blowing. Just read 10 Reasons to Delete Your Social Media Account.
Ah, interesting.
Yep. And I am currently reading Talking to Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell, which is amazing. And I've got on my to-read list Less is More by Jason Hickel, which is about how can we move away from this relentless obsession with growth and how can we get an economy that's all about making the world better and more sustainable and more equitable rather than just endless growth.
Right. Great. And do you have any particular routines, ways of working that are particularly effective for you, enable you to get what you need to get done and play at your best? Listeners are always interested in the hacks and tactics that kind of senior leaders, MDs, CEOs employ to run their days and businesses.
Yes, I do. So Olio has been remote first from day one. So we've actually worked remotely for 6 years now. And that is, I'm sure everybody is now experiencing kind of the master of all hacks, because it gifts you back 5 to 10 hours a week that would have been otherwise spent in sort of dead commuting time. But the other really important thing about that is not just sort of working from home, but also working flexibly. And so I work all sorts of weird hours that sort of suits me according to when I'm going to be most productive and how it balances with my family life. And what I've noticed is that when you give that same degree of flexibility to everybody in your organization, their level of engagement, motivation, and productivity goes off the charts, because at the end of the day, we all want to just have control over our own lives. And then the other sort of final piece really is I have realized that I do my best work when I don't look like I'm working. So when I'm not in front of a computer. So I do my best work when I'm running or cycling or showering or going for a walk. And I now no longer feel guilty about going for a walk at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because I'm actually doing my best quality thinking then.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And there's so much neuroscience research that's now kind of evolving that kind of explains why that's the case. But I absolutely love that. Final question. From a leadership perspective, Tessa, what's keeping you up at night at the moment? And if you're not actually losing sleep over anything right now, that's brilliant. But what is occupying a lot of your thoughts and brain power?
Well, I'm on this kind of startup treadmill with an enormous goal that we've set ourselves, which is to get to a billion Olioers by 2030. So we just have a sort of a huge amount to do in between now and then. So I feel like I've got this constant sort of egg timer on my shoulders. And in particular, because we're a startup, we're constantly sort of having to fundraise, or fairly regularly we're having to fundraise. And so what keeps me awake at night is just really making sure that the whole organization is going to hit our KPIs that we need to unlock our next round of funding, which will then enable us to unlock our next stage of growth.
Brilliant. And Tessa, final one, which might enable me to help you via the listeners. Where can people find out more about Olio, or perhaps how could people get in touch with you? Or maybe they can't if you've acted on 10 reasons to delete your social media platforms.
Yeah. So if you go to the App Store or Google Play, you can find Olio. Or if you go into Google and Google Olio, so that's O-L-I-O, you will find us. And then I write occasionally on Medium at Tessa LF Clark. I'm on LinkedIn and also Twitter.
Fantastic. Tessa, thank you so much for making time to come on the show today. I know you said before we hit record, I think you had a day of 3 podcasts. So really appreciate it. There was so much in there that I know listeners, future MDs, CEOs are going to take huge, huge value from. So thank you very much and have a great rest of the day, whatever it is you're doing. My interview with Tessa Clark, co-founder and CEO of Olio. I really enjoyed that conversation with Tessa and loved the fact that I managed to derail my own interview within just a few minutes of starting. I hope you found that episode as insightful and energizing as I did, and that it really provides some help and guidance to you on your own leadership journey. And do remember, if you ever feel as though you are struggling to keep your head above water and stay focused in this crazy world that we are all living and leading in, then do check out the link to my brand new Personal Leadership Mastery course, which is designed to help us move from just surviving to thriving in a VUCA world. And do remember, there's also that exclusive 30% discount code for you as a fan of the podcast. And finally, if you're enjoying the show, then please do rate, review and subscribe via iTunes and share it with your friends, colleagues and on your social media platforms, as this really does help us grow the podcast, grow the audience and keep bringing you more and more interviews with great MDs, CEOs and subject matter experts. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll speak to you all again in the next episode. Take care and see you soon.